Radio MD. RadioMD.com.
He's a cardiologist. He's a chef. He's America's culinary interventionalist. It's time for Code Delicious with Dr. Michael Fenster.
Hello, Food Nation, Healthy Nation. Welcome to Code Delicious with Dr. Mike. I am Dr. Mike, and I am absolutely delighted to be doing culinary CPR once again with my good friend, Chef Luca. You know him, you love him. Luca is all over the place, literally globetrotting, just back from Italy. We'll have to talk to him about that and probably steal some more secrets. He runs Luca's Mediterranean Cafe in Keene, New Hampshire, where he's been, of course, restaurateur chef of the year. He's been on Food Network, which he dominated on programs like Guys Grocery Games. I could go on and on, but then we'd run out of time for the segment. So, Luca, my friend, welcome back, chef.
That's welcome. Thank you, man. I'm really excited to be home. Just getting back into the swing of things, getting back to some cooking after eating for 10 days straight in different ports of call throughout the Mediterranean. So it's been absolutely a pleasure to be away, but I'm glad to be back and glad to be back on the show, man, and talking to you because I missed you. So what's going on?
Well, first of all, you know, you're not goofing off. You're not goofing off, and you are absolutely, not just eating. You are doing what we call in the profession research. This is R&D.
Well,
so whenever, when you go to Italy, that's hard work, man. That's hard work drinking that wine, eating that great food.
Someone has to do it, and I think it should be us. And if we could do it all the time, plus you can write it off on your taxes. I hope they're not listening. But anyway, no, it was a great trip. And you know what I think, Mike, what I found most exciting about this trip, and we're going to get into that when we talk your recipe, too, about, you know, ancient foods and the foods of the Mediterranean. And you and I go up back and forth all the time about, you know, a diet of the Mediterranean, how they eat, why they eat. It's bigger than just the food and getting fed. It's social. So you throw all that stuff into the pile. But what was great about going back, and the last time I went was 16 years ago, and I was born in Italy, and I grew up going to Italy on a regular basis. Every couple of years, we go back to visit the family. My dad made sure that when we moved here, we would always go back and visit. So I always lived the lifestyle and didn't realize what I was living. But, you know, how the food was the social aspect. As you grow up, you start getting it. Now, we've gone back a bunch of times, and we had our kids, so I opened the restaurants and did all this other stuff. So it's been a while since I've been back there. But all it did for me is reaffirm the way you eat is different. And not just the food. The food's important. But the way you eat, smaller plates. The idea of not this big, heavy, you know, the portions aren't the size of a small cow on your plate, you know. Doing a pasta course. You know, literally, I'm doing four-course meals here. Doing an appetizer, a pasta, an entree, and then a dessert of some sort, which is very light and airy and perfect. And I never felt full. I mean, I ate more in the last 10 days completely than I have in the last 6 months, and I didn't gain a pound. And part of it was walking around, part of it was we ate. You know, and I'm just like looking at it going...
But you know, I think it's... I was going to say, you know, I think a part of that, too, is a lot of the quality of the food that you get over there, you know, and you bring up, you know, a couple of great points. One is which that you, you know, you said, well, I'd never feel full. And I think sometimes that fullness that we have is it's a result of, you know, portion sizes, which could feed a small village. But it's also, you know, when you don't eat good things and you start getting some inflammation and people talk about certain foods, modern foods that, hey, I eat that, I kind of feel bloaty. You know, I think that is part of that inflammatory process. And this is you reminded me of an interesting study that was done long ago. And not too long ago, I should say, and they looked at fast food in France, and they found that when the French eat, and, you know, I think folks in Europe tend to sort of take a lot more time in general, but even when the French went to eat fast food, it took them 20 minutes in a McDonald's, it took them 20 minutes more compared to somebody in the U.S. So
exactly.
It goes back, and, you know, I've really kind of changed my vernacular when referring to the Mediterranean diet, because that makes it sound like, oh, you know, it's, you've got to eat the, you know, it's pasta and it's tomatoes. But really what it is exactly what you just outlined. It's a food approach. I call it the Mediterranean approach. And I think you are spot on with what you hit. Just, you know, when you're relaxed and you're having a good time, the meal tastes different, doesn't it?
Yeah. It's a whole different world. And I like to, you know, and my kids were the first people to notice the difference between fast food or deli food or quick sandwich or, you know, like the, even the quick gastronomias where it's kind of self-service. Although I tell you, they wanted so badly to go into McDonald's while we were over there, no matter where, whether it was Barcelona or Rome or Florence. Dad, can we go in? And I go, we can walk in. And they're like, Dad, they have an espresso machine. I said, yeah, everywhere does. But then I would, then we'd go to a small bar cafe, you know, and I get an espresso and we get something small. And we'd eat there too. I mean, that's part of your nosh for the morning or what have you, a cappuccino and something. And then we'd, if we're on one of the busier days where we don't have a place to stop, we stopped in Barcelona. We got jamón and queso, a nice ham and cheese sandwich. But they were, you know, the bread was wonderful. It was delicious. It wasn't too big. You could almost have two of these if you really wanted to. But one was filling because, and there wasn't 3 pounds of ham on it and then a, and then 17 slices of cheese. There was no need for that. It was really good quality ham. You know, whether you got the jamón that was, you know, the a really good quality cured jamón, or you got the jamón corto, or you did whatever. It was, you didn't need a lot, and you'd get one of those, and then say, okay, after another 4 miles that we're walking because we're traveling the city, maybe we'll pick up something else, or you know, I could try something somewhere else. And it felt good. So even the fast food aspect, that's what, you know, on some days we did that when we weren't having full meals. It was good. And the kids were like, Dad, this is so much better than stuff we're eating sometimes. And, you know, when we go out to a place in the United States. And I go, yeah, it makes a big difference.
Well, it really does. You know, there's no need to write double the meat, double the cheese,
because
what's on your sandwich actually has flavor. And it's, mm-hmm. and it's simple things, you know, it's like pork, salt, maybe some spices, you know, maybe some herbs, but it has flavor. And in the United States, so much of our food is adulterated and, you know, it's built to sort of subconsciously addict us. And so instead of real food with real flavors and that hence, you know, real nutrients and, you know, components that are beneficial for us and our gut microbiome, you just get this layering of, you know, artificially constructed, you know, fats and more salt and sweeteners, you know, even at the, at the subliminal level. You know, one of the great things about going over to Europe and, for example, getting those fresh breads is, you know, you don't have to worry about them adding sugar to it, you know, at a level where, you know, it's a sort of subliminal. And, you know, I think what you talked about and sort of those lessons that you bring back from modern Italy and Spain really reflect a very ancient approach to food, you know, again, that Mediterranean approach to food, because I think that that's something that I think it's just entrenched in those cultures over there. What's your take on it since you just got back?
Well, it's exactly that. And like I said, when we first started, it energized me to the point that we're doing, whether we're talking about it on the radio or we're cooking this and we're the books, the way we're feeding people there at the restaurant, we are doing exactly the right thing. Because even in Europe, as things have changed in time, where the McDonald's have been introduced, the Burger King's, these fast food concepts, even there, you don't find the smaller places or the regional places feeling this this sense of competing with them. So they know what's good, and they're creating that, and you're going to see it. And I tell you, I think, Mike, I got it from my kids the most when I saw their faces light up at some of the food that they would be presented with and go, wow, this is really good, Dad. I said, exactly. And I said, this is stuff that we're used to eating at home, but we're getting it in a different atmosphere. And I think it's wonderful. The feeling about being over there, I used to always say when I was a kid, everything tasted better just because you were on vacation and in Italy. And I realize it helps that you're on vacation, but it helps that the, you know, like, okay, here's a perfect example. We're in Sorrento, right? And we're walking around eating, and And we have a private tour guide because I want to learn more about, I want the kids to learn as much about the area as possible. And the tour guide had figured out I was a chef. We were talking food. So he started, the conversations were built on that. We were passing by farms that fed most of Sorrento. It wasn't this movement to eating local. This was, they got as much local as possible, and they were supplementing with non-local. That's a big difference, man. Here we get non-local, and we supplement with local to say we're a locally sourced place, right? Because that's what most places do around here.
That's a lot of places, right?
Yeah, this is like, this. He's pointing out this farm, they supply most of the food for Sorrento. And I went, most of the food, like, you know, a couple of, no, you have no understanding is, you know, when you see tomatoes or you see the lemons or you see this or you see that, that's all local. There's no, we don't import that kind of stuff. You know, the seafood that comes from the ocean is the seafood that comes from the ocean. If it's not coming out of there, we're not eating it. So I was amazed by it, and I love the concept. And they're still doing the right way, you know.
And you're historically, what you just identified is how it really has been practiced up until the sort of the modern age, you know, even, right. you know, the beginning of the 20th century, it was still exactly as you described it. And what we're finding out now, when we look back and we compare and contrast sort of how we do it, as you said, maybe a little local stuff, but there's still a lot of processing and transport that goes on versus kind of keeping it literally, forgive the pun, but I got to throw one in because I know you missed me, homegrown, you know, the elements there. You know, what we're finding out is that homegrown approach is really so much better for it. That's what we have evolved, and our gut microbiome, all those bacteria that are so important for our health, that's what they've, you know, sort of come to expect. And I want to share with the folks this recipe. It's an adaptation from my upcoming book that'll be out next month. If you have not pre-ordered your copy, get over to Amazon.com and type in, you know, Mike Fenster, F-E-N-S-T-E-R, and Ancient Eats, and get your discount on a pre-order copy. But the same things that you just pointed out in Europe also existed in Viking culture. You know, and people think that, oh gosh, you know, all they did was eat lots of meat, you know, at these big feasts. And so one of the folks that helped me with the book and kind of oversaw the information to make sure it was correct was one of the world's experts in Viking food archaeology, sort of culinary archaeologist. And he kindly allowed us to reproduce some of his recipes for the book because, you know, he's the world's expert. So I happen to see, and you might have seen this in Europe, it's not a cut that you can find very often in the U.S., but it is absolutely fantastic in terms of flavor and profile and fun things to do. And that's a lamb breast. So we got a lamb breast, which is, you know, kind of it comes as a rectangular sheet. We put a little cumin, a little mustard, and a little coriander, all spices that were very common to the Vikings. And then I used a live culture sauerkraut that also had some seaweed added to it. And again, something that they might have used. And so we're getting some probiotics in that. And, you know, we tied it up, we seasoned it, let it sit in a brine/marinade, which was the juices that the cabbage came in, combined with a little mead, which is a honey wine, a little bit of chicken broth, and a bouquet garni. And then just all we did was then sear that off to get a nice crust on it and braised it for several hours. And it was so tender, so good. And along in the braising liquid, we cooked some turnips, which again were very common Viking food. And then I pureed the turnips after we strained off the juices that the lamb roasted in, and, you know, skimmed some of the fat off. I took a page from your book because you taught me that little trick, and then just made like a nice little turnip puree sort of slash sauce right over the top, and you know, we garnished it. So we didn't waste anything, you know, from the lamb in terms of reusing the cooking liquid as a source for the puree, etc. And it was so tender, so good, so flavorful. And I'm thinking, wow, you know, if I was a Viking and I had this food, I might not have jumped on a boat to go raiding.
<You know? laughs> Yeah, like why are they going anywhere? You know what I really love, and I got to tell you that you know, lamb breast is. I mean, I've done many things with veal breast, and and different things, but I've never tried a lamb breast, and this has inspired me, man. I'm going to find it, and as soon as I find it, I'm going to make a Mediterranean version of it and see what that comes out.
You absolutely have to share that recipe because that would be so much fun. I would love to try that, and I've gotten a little spoiled because I have a guy who I can go to, and he and his partner are craft butchers. So they get a heritage breed lamb that is allowed to do nothing more than walk around the fields and graze. And they break down the lamb on a Thursday evening, and then it's there for sale at a farmer's market on a Saturday morning.
Yeah, that's perfect. And I have a lot of local lamb growers around, or raisers around here. That's the first call I'm going to make after our show is to that. And I want to get one in here.
Well, I'm so excited to hear that. So what would you, now to put a Mediterranean kind of flair on that, share with us your creative process, because you're like a culinary genius.
I've done veal breast. I love doing veal breast. And, one of the things is I make a frittata, a really thin frittata, and a veal breast, and I was thinking about it like this, and just do a vegetable frittata, and so it lays right on top, and when you roll it up, it seriously rolls with the lamb, so it's thin enough and doesn't break a lot. And then, so you have like an egg center mixture. That's the first thing that came to my head. But I honestly, with the lamb breast, I'd love to go more into the Eastern Mediterranean and kind of bring in that kind of Greek flavor, rosemary, oregano, find some way to get onions in the center of this, maybe some feta and onion, spinach kind of thing. That's the simplest I could think of right away, because I'm thinking I'm thinking Greek. But I think it would be a lot of fun if you just went into that, that Greek feel, or that Eastern Mediterranean lamb with the spinach and almost like a spanakopita inside, but add some olives into there and see how that comes out. And then I'm with you about I'd braise root vegetables around the outside. Keep some of them, reserve some of them, use the other ones to help thicken my stock, and I think it would be a great dish, man.
Oh, wow, that's, there is no interference in the radio segment. That is my stomach rumbling after hearing Luca describe that. Oh, man, that absolutely sounds so, so good. And again, can you just real quick tell folks, for those who don't know, what a frittata is?
Frittata is an Italian-style omelet, basically, for lack of a better term. You could do it in a pan like you do an omelet. From Umbria, where I come from, we actually use a tortino. That's our style of frittata, where we add a little bit of flour to it, so it gives it more of a crust into the omelet. But we'll do this. We'll add our vegetables in, add our eggs, add our cheese, everything. Usually potatoes are in there at some point. And then you could actually bake it all off in the oven. In an oven pan, and I try and get them really thin, so you can either make thin sandwiches out of them, or in this case, either roll them up into one of our veal roasts or things like that. So it's very, very, it's something great to have, and it's good cold or hot. Most people think omelet, you have to have hot all the time. Frittata, cold on a sandwich with just like maybe a little garlic scape pesto or some type of puree on top of that, or roasted peppers and a little cheese, make a wonderful sandwich.
Well, that's great. And you've sort of given folks, like if you did one of those and you made the pan, then you had leftover, hey, you don't absolutely don't throw that away. Sort of got almost like a little egg salad, sandwich ready to go when you need it. And again,
exactly.
You can buy the more expensive good eggs. Oh yeah, much, much better. But people say, well, gosh, if I don't eat the whole thing and I've paid all this extra to get the cage-free organic eggs, well, hey, you don't waste anything, And I think that maybe is one of the culinary skills that we really need to emphasize is how economical eating well can be. I mean, the people that you saw in Europe, food's expensive, but they're eating well, they're eating real stuff.
And they will spend the money for the food because they know how to take care of it the whole way through. And they'll use it all. So that's what it is. Using it all is the biggest key.
Yeah, it absolutely is. Luca, thanks so much for being on the show. I know you just got back from Europe. I appreciate you stopping by, and I'm absolutely looking forward to your take on the lamb breast. Folks, if you want to see what Luca's up to, go to lucaparis.com. Also, check out cardiochef.com to see what I'm up to. Thanks once again. You've been listening to Code Delicious on Radio MD with Dr. Mike.